Rabbi Beryl Wein is a historian, a teacher of Torah, a lawyer, a columnist, and a popular Jerusalem lecturer. In the program Wein Online, he talks about the meaning of the Torah portion of the week. Welcome to Wein Online with Rabbi Beryl Wein, talking this week about which parsha?
Parshas B'Shalach. It's a pleasure again to be here with you, Elliot, and I appreciate the introduction. The story of B'Shalach, Jewish people are free. They go out in the world. They're pursued all of a sudden by the Pharaoh, whom they thought that they'd gotten rid of. They're trapped between the desert and between the sea. The Lord miraculously splits the sea, and the Jewish people are saved. There's the great song of Moshe. In fact, this parsha is called Shabbat Shirah, the Shabbat of song, the great song that the Jews recite every day in their prayers as a memorial for this event, for this miracle that saved them. But the point that I find very interesting is that, the Duke of Wellington once said that the only thing worse than defeat is victory. Because when you're defeated, you know what you're supposed to do, right? You go out, you hire some more free agents, and you try and build yourself up. You know where you have to go. When you win, now what do you do? And that is always a problem. It's part of the problem that we face here in the land of Israel, is that thank God we've won all of our wars, but we still don't know what to do. How do you settle the problem? What do we do now? Well, the Jewish people are redeemed from Egypt. The Red Sea is split. The Egyptian army is drowned. Everything is perfect. Now what do we do? And the Torah tells us that they go into the desert, and in the desert there's no food to eat and there's no water to drink. And the real problems of life face us. And so it's a crisis of faith. I have a sign on my desk that says, confidence is the feeling that you have until you understand the problem. Well, all of a sudden, here's the problem. Now what do we do? So the Lord is going to supply them with bread. The manna from heaven, the manna from heaven is going to fall. It's all going to happen miraculously. But the Jewish people don't like that because we don't like to be dependent upon God. We like, you see it in a child, in an infant. When a child can start to feed himself, he only wants to feed himself. He's not going to let you feed him. Even though he makes a terrible mess on the table and on the carpet and on himself. But I want to do it. And that's a positive thing because we don't want to be dependent. But on the other hand, we know that in life we are very dependent. We're dependent upon others and we're dependent upon God. And the Jewish people find it always difficult to be able to deal with the mon simply because of the fact that it reinforces the idea that they're dependent upon God. Then they come to Mora, and in Mora they're looking for water to drink. The necessity of life is water, and in the desert there is no water. And they find water, and the worst of all things is that it's not potable. It's water that you can't drink. I think there's no greater frustration than that. The famous line in The Ancient Mariner, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. The fact that there's water everywhere makes it even more poignant that there's not a drop to drink. And Moshe throws in the Lord tells him to throw in an olive branch, and he throws it in, and the water becomes sweet, and the people are able to drink. So there's a lesson there, too, that in life, a man has to somehow throw something in to make the water sweet. A man has to contribute, and the symbol of the olive branch and is the symbol of Torah, the symbol of spirituality, the symbol of having something concrete in your life other than just the material needs. Because we find that hedonism or the pursuit of goods or even of wealth, it's like drinking salt water, right? You're never satiated. It's never enough. And therefore, there's an emptiness within us. And the Torah wants to fill that emptiness. It wants to give us a relationship with God, a relationship with other human beings, and it wants us to appreciate the fact that even though we don't have manna that falls from heaven in front of our doors every day, whatever we do have is also a gift of God. And the idea of making a blessing before we eat, of making blessings after we eat, of saying thank you, All of that, being appreciative, all of that is basic to the Jewish view of life and the Jewish lifestyle. And all of that is incorporated in this week's parsha. After the great victory is not enough. It's necessary. Without it, God forbid, we would have been destroyed. The Pharaoh would have killed us all or taken us back as slaves. So that great victory is to be celebrated in song. But what happens afterwards? What happens on the morrow? In so many instances in life, is that true? It's true in marriage, it's true in family, it's true in children, it's true in a career. It repeats itself over and over again. Now what do we do? How do we fill ourselves now? And that really is the preparation for the parsha that we'll read next week, the parsha of Yitro, which is the divine revelation at Sinai, and the Ten Commandments, etc., because that is meant to slake our thirst. That is meant to allow us somehow to be a noble and leading people in the world, to project the ideas of spirituality of God amongst mankind. So it truly is a Sabbath of song, because the song keeps on playing. It plays in our everyday life, in our everyday actions, even in the small things that we do. And that's the song of the Jewish people and the song of God himself.
Can I ask you a quick question, Rabbi, about faith from this parsha? Here it is that the Jews can see God's presence. They have they've just been through the division of the Red Sea. They have the food that comes from the bread from heaven. They have all of these things, and yet it seems as if with all that, with God's actual physical presence among them, that they have these doubts. And what does that say to people in this year, so many years after Yetzias Mitzrayim? What are the answers that we can take away from this experience?
A very good question, Elliot. The rabbis always emphasize that miracles do not produce faith. Faith has to be created by an inner commitment, by a struggle. When I headed a yeshiva for many decades, I always was looking for someone that could teach faith 101. I never found the person. It has to be developed within itself. And over the long history of the Jewish people, it was ingrained within Jews, but it's easily lost. Every generation has to regain it. So we need miracles and we need to be saved, but no one should think that because miracles happen, we have freedom of choice. That's the basic thing, and the freedom of choice. If miracles would eliminate the freedom of choice, then, so to speak, it wouldn't be fair. So the Lord constructed us in such a way that we can witness all of the greatest miracles in the world and not have faith, not believe. Look at this marvelous universe that's so complex, and people say, well, it happened at random, right? Well, nothing, I'd like to see, I've never seen anything at random work, at least in my house. So, but here this whole thing is at random, so God allows us to say all of these things, because faith is an inner attainment, and it's something that we have to work on every day in our lives, and it's constantly challenged. And since the Lord is infinite and we're finite, so we just don't get it, and we'll never be able to get it, that's where faith comes in. Good question. It's one that we should all ponder.
You've been listening to Wine Online with Rabbi Beryl Wein, talking this week about Parshat Shalach. Join us again next week. Thank you, Rabbi.